Okay, so we've got a select group for this presentation. So in 2012, Taylor Fry carried out an actuarial valuation of the New Zealand social welfare system, and their report on the valuation, and the valuation might be a world first. That's available on the website of the Ministry of Social Development in New Zealand. And today we've got Alan Greenfield from Taylor Fry and Ben McBride from New Zealand Treasury here to do a double act and talk about the valuation, and hopefully that will either whet your appetite to go and read the report, which I think is 173 pages long.
I think it's closer to 300.
Are they only published 173 pages? Or, alternatively, if you have read all the 173 pages, it's your opportunity to ask all the questions that arose while you were reading them. So I'm going to hand over, I'm not sure, I think Ben's going to go first. I'm going to hand over to Ben to start the presentation.
Hello. As Estelle said, I'm from New Zealand Treasury, and we're the government's primary economic and financial advisor, but also advise on the performance of the public sector and what we call machinery of government issues. Briefly, I'll talk a little bit about the welfare reform in New Zealand and then hand over to Alan to talk about the valuation in more detail. And then go talk a little bit about implementing the investment approach, as we've called it in New Zealand. And obviously, Alan's here to talk about the detail of evaluation, which may be the biggest valuation ever carried out, as far as I'm aware, but I'm not very up to date with these things. But the focus of my presentation is talk about why the New Zealand government has chosen to make actuaries a key part of their welfare reform. And these reforms in New Zealand and welfare are the biggest in 50 years, at least, since the 1960s. And they may represent, they're very much a trial, and they may represent a big change in the way New Zealand does business, the government does business in New Zealand in the future. So this is a graph of the growth of the working age population and benefits since 1960. You'll see, it's actually 3 years out of date, but unemployment benefit represents a comparatively small part of a working age population on benefit, but it's a figure that gets all the public attention. You also see the proportion of people on disability-related benefits. It's the invalid's benefit and sickness benefit. These benefits got their entire names quite a few years ago, so they're not really PC. Has grown significantly through while unemployment has shrunk after the structural reforms in the 1980s. There are various explanations about the growth of disability-related benefits, consequences of structural reform, general malaise, etc., but it is notable that disability-related benefits have grown basically across the OECD while population as a whole has got healthier and longer lived. And while there are economic and fiscal costs of being out of work that would worry any Treasury or government, it is the cost to the individual and their health and their welfare and the communities, etc., that is of most concern. It is well established, I think, that after a relatively short amount of time out of a workforce, that is a lack of connection that is keeping people out, psychosocial factors that are keeping people from work rather than the condition or situation that got them out of work in the first place. The government commissioned a group of individuals, the Welfare Working Group, report, and they basically confirmed this. They looked closely at the ACC scheme in New Zealand, who after a period of declining performance in the mid-2000s, so 2005-2009, had started to gain impressive results in rehabilitation of long-term claimants. They liked the way ACC's understanding of long-term costs enabled them to identify those who are at the greatest risk of requiring long-term support and spending resources up front to do something about it. I'm not going to read off a slide. It's something I said that I never do because it's very bad form. So instead, I'll just pause at this point to talk a little bit about the New Zealand government context, because the actual approach offers a potential to address one of its significant shortcomings. The New Zealand bureaucracy was reformed in the late 80s by Treasury and was modelled on a corporate model. So it works very well on paper. In simple terms, it's about government and parliament specifying objectives and then giving CEs freedom to manage, to deliver on those objectives in return for providing information about performance. as I said, been designed by economists. It works very well on paper. But the reality, of course, is quite different. While New Zealand public sector accounts are some of the most transparent in the world, government is much more complex than the corporate world. The departments have multiple objectives. These often conflict and are constrained by political imperatives. Ministers obviously want the departments to do a lot of things, but most of all they want them not to fuck up and keep them off the front page. The lack of information on performance is an issue right across the public sector. But getting that key performance about how effective the agency has been in delivering on its objectives. And given the need to be seen to be doing something, given the political cycle is so short, ministers often get heavily involved in how a department does its business, and so the reality of a freedom to manage is quite constrained. And the basis of a government's reform is what we've called an investment approach. At Treasury, we hate the word investment because it's just another word for spending, and we would rather use the word spending. But the intention is to get a fuller understanding of the long-term costs of welfare and of the effectiveness of the agency's interventions in achieving and doing something about it. Treasury and MSD, which is the Ministry of Social Development, who administer deliver the welfare system, commissioned Taylor Fry to provide a feasibility study of taking an actuarial approach to managing the welfare system. Taylor Fry, of course, as they would confirm that it was feasible, that the liability was a good proxy for the cost of welfare, that valuations and subsequent detailed analysis would provide a good information framework for managing the benefit systems, both for politicians and society at large, but also particularly for MSD management. They emphasised that it wasn't the number of a liability that mattered, but how and why it changed between valuations. And essentially the investment approach or the actuarial approach is an information framework about, but what sits beneath it, the way the agency changes its service delivery model is absolutely key in the way it delivers its interventions. Now there are three levels to the investment approach. The first level is this aggregate valuation of a benefit system, regularly carried out on a regular basis. The focus is very much at that government or public political high level to get a picture of how the benefit system is changing. The more detailed level is a cohort or segment level valuation at level two, and that provides a granular analysis of costs and trends. It's particularly useful for management and monitoring those trends, determining its priorities for its interventions, setting targets and objectives. The third level is an area of experimentation and innovation, a sort of client and cohort level of evaluations. And if working properly, the three levels talk to each other, and so anything that's effective at a third level can be will get reflected at a higher level. In large extent, I've got called here, it's an idea of come. My understanding might be a little bit out of date, but I understand that Australian Productivity Commission recommended that the liability of a disability injury scheme is calculated, not funded, so to use it as a basis for monitoring the costs and trends over time. Overseas, there's a lot of countries looking at how agencies and decision makers have trying to shift the way agencies and decision makers think about long-term costs. We, in New Zealand, we have a 40-year fiscal projection, the US has a 70-year one. That's to help ministers and decision makers think about policy choices in the public and debate them in public. There's also a board of BNIES, this International Public Sector Accounting Standards Board, who say that what's going on in New Zealand is the next frontier, but they'd be quite happy if more countries adopted accrual accounting. We've had quite a bit of interest from other countries as well since this has started, who are looking at what's going on in New Zealand. Obviously, it's quite a challenging, to a large extent, this is a trial of a different, as I say, of a way of government intervening. And if it works in the welfare sector in New Zealand, then it's got potential to work in other sectors as well. And there's a lot of political interest at this moment with the current government in New Zealand at extending this to other sections, such as the justice or health sector. It's going to be difficult to. There's some key challenges. It's going to be quite difficult to manage the politics of this. Ministers, the liability is not a concept that many people understand, and it's open for to use in political ways, as you can imagine. I'll now hand over to Alan to talk in more detail about the valuation itself.
Okay, thanks, Ben. Right, it's interesting to be here to present on this again. I've presented about 20 or 30 times on this particular topic, so hopefully I don't appear as bored as I am. No, it's actually the most interesting valuation I've ever worked on, the biggest certainly, and hopefully you get an idea of it. What do I press?
Not that one.
This one.
Oh, something
that
else.
One. Yep. Okay, so the first thing we did when we were asked, as Ben said, to do a feasibility study, which, thinking back, was probably a poor idea because the carrot of doing the valuation meant that, of course, you were going to say it was feasible. But I think the Welfare Working Group had already sort of outlined that it was a good idea, and really it was more about what would you do and how would you do it. And so when we moved on to do the valuation, we sat down and we did a lot of head-scratching because the context of the Welfare Working Group was that, you know, this would be like the ACC in New Zealand, a sort of a workers' compensation or accident compensation type approach to things. So from a distance, you know, that all sounds fine, but when you sit down and work out, well, how are you going to do a liability valuation for people on benefits, it's a little bit more difficult because there is no definition of a liability. There's no contract between the citizens of the country and the government that says when a liability arises. So that was the sort of the biggest first issue that we needed to deal with. And it did take some time and several efforts with Treasury and MSD to agree on something. I'll get to what we agreed on in a minute. But the other sort of initial comparisons that we looked at were, or the differences, I guess, between a typical general insurance valuation were things like the need to have more of a tool and insight and operational view to this rather than purely doing something for compliance or liability or balance sheet purposes. I mean, this is definitely not for balance sheet purposes. There was ultimately there was never going to be a strong focus on funding the liability. There have been some people who wanted to do that, but for you'll see how much it is, and it would take decades to try and fund it. So it was really more about managing the social welfare system. So we needed a valuation that gave good insight into the operational side of things. So, unlike other valuations that we deal with, it's not simply a matter of looking at accident year and development year. So we have a lot more time or duration measures that are important, which means that looking at two-way triangles and things just wasn't going to work. So we needed an approach that we could look at multi-dimensions of time. If you are interested in the 173-page report, according to Extel, I'm sure there were 300, then that link gives you all of the things that are all the reports that have been released publicly. Okay, so the definition of liability, which we spent some time working on, we thought about just doing everybody who is currently on a benefit. So you could say the liability is all of the future lifetime costs of the people who are currently at the balance date receiving a benefit. There are issues with that, things like seasonality. You might miss out any data issues that you have in the system that would mean that was perhaps not the best choice. And we thought about, you know, any New Zealander, what's the liability that you might attach to anybody who's living in New Zealand who has the chance to receive benefits in the future. But we went somewhere in between the two, which was anybody who had received a benefit in the year up to the valuation date. And so this is just a schematic of that. So we had the what we call the liability for current clients, so those that had received a benefit in the year up to that point, and then the future liability, which you might think of as something like a premium pool for each year into the future. And then there was three parts to the scope of the valuation. There were the direct benefits paid to people. Those are the MSD, what's called the MSD benefits. Then there's the sort of the expenses side of things split into two halves. There's two parts, the part that relates to just administering the system and then the part that relates to interventions that get people back to work or off benefits. All right, so just looking at the scope of the valuation, there's something like 15 or so different benefit types that we valued. So they're all of the dark greenish coloured boxes or blue, and then the expenses at the bottom, the light blue ones. But there were different levels of benefits. So the key tier one benefits are the things that that are on the left here. They're the unemployment benefits, domestic purposes benefits in New Zealand, which are sole parent benefits, sickness related benefits, and invalid benefits. So they're the ones related to some sort of disability. And then there are a whole stream of other benefits. You can read those at your leisure. And to value them, we worked on the main four in a lot more detail than the rest. So those four, we have a sort of a holistic view of the universe of those benefits. So rather than try and do them individually, we had a system of models that describes how people move between each of those benefits or off benefits. And the importance of doing that sort of arose out of our initial analysis of the data, which showed that there really is a lot of movement between benefit types. So, for example, people don't stay on unemployment benefits very long, but if they're sort of general users of the system, they might graduate to a sickness benefit and then back to unemployment and so forth. And so they can spend a lot of time on benefits, but transferring between the various types. So it was important to get that structure. So we have probability type models that describe whether people stay on these benefits or move off, and then average payments for those people. So just to give you an example, this is the structure for the unemployment benefit models, and it shows that you start with a certain number of people on unemployment benefits, and then there's a model that says what's the probability of that person staying on benefits for the quarter, and if they stay, then you know where they are. If they go off, do they go off benefits entirely? So we call that NOB, but MSD would prefer we call it something else, I think. It seems to have stuck though, so I think we're still using it. So if they go off benefit, they go to NOB. Otherwise, they go to a different benefit type. So in this case, it could be to IB, the invalids, or another benefit type, or sickness, or DPB. So they're the sort of transition probability models that describe where somebody is in the scheme. The other sort of relatively important benefit types are these two, the accommodation supplement and disability allowance. So they're two benefits that are paid on top of your sort of main benefit. So everyone who's on a unemployment benefit could also be receiving an accommodation supplement, for example. And these two are, it was easy enough to include these as sort of an extra payment on top of everyone who is currently receiving one of those other four benefit types. So they were done in that manner, which is shown there. And then the rest were these things. That looks rather like a Pac-Man, doesn't it? I would have told you how we'd valued these things in brief, but there's no point anymore because we've moved on. We're currently doing the next valuation for the New Zealand government, and we've changed the way we're valuing these things. So I'm not at liberty to tell you how, but you can read about it at the end of the year when it's all made public. I'm under strict instructions not to give anything away at this point. So you can read about the older method that we used in the valuation report. The two at the bottom, the expenses, they're smaller, and given the amount of time we have, probably won't go into detail with those either. Okay, so how did the valuation work? We, and this has also been superseded, but it's probably worth describing it anyway because it still forms the basis of what we're currently doing. The projection process just takes the number of clients in a particular category, so with certain characteristics. So, for example, unemployment, they're on unemployment benefits at the time of the valuation. They've had 5 quarters on benefits. They're aged 20 and a half, and they're 10 in that bucket. So then use your probability models and work out where they move, and then apply the average benefit payment models to work out how much is paid. And then you keep doing that for 200 quarters. And you can see that quite readily you end up with a massive numerical computational problem, because the number of states that we end up with is about 50 million, I think, excluding some of the more, some of the categories of DPB, which mean that you end up with more than 50 million. So to project 50 million states for 200 quarters is quite a difficult exercise. So we ended up running it on 10 computers, running multiple processes on each computer, so about 50 processes at a time for 2 hours. So it's about 100 hours of computer time to get it done, the single valuation. Well, we've moved on from that. There's some advantage. Initially, we were pretty concerned to do things in a numerical way, because we did think about doing simulation techniques, but we were concerned that we might not get an accurate answer, and we wouldn't know if we had an accurate answer or not. Since then, we've carried out another valuation, and it proved to be the case that running a simulation is viable. So that's what the next approach is using. Just a few comments about the projection procedure. Because of the way it's run, it gives you a lot of flexibility. You can run projection for a single person. You can run it for small cohorts. And it's doing these sorts of things that will provide the sort of insight and information for management at MSD, so that they can actually make something of the valuation, rather than it being a rather large white elephant. And also worth pointing out that the main drivers in the in this valuation were those things listed there, which are sort of obvious things: age, the duration that someone's been on benefit, what benefit quarter you're modelling. So in the history, because of policy type changes and economic impacts, you get quite strong influences on the number of people on benefits. And whether people have had other benefits is a driver of their likelihood to stay in the system. And partner information and whether they've got children. Economic assumptions. Now, everyone at MSD and Treasury were always very interested in what we were doing with economic assumptions. It surprised me somewhat, because I think of it as sort of almost a non-event. You know, you choose your economic assumptions, and so long as you communicate what you've chosen and then communicate any changes and what their impact is, then sort of end of the story. But, MSD is a newcomer to the world of actuarial valuations, and you'll see later that a small change in discount rate leads to an $8 billion change in the valuation. So there was obviously a lot of interest in it, but ultimately the economic assumptions that we used were those that Treasury provide for Crown accounting, so there wasn't too much argument. All right, I'll just now show you some results. Some people like to see these. So there's the big number, 78 billion. So it is by a factor of, 40 or something, the biggest valuation I've worked on in terms of the size of it. That's in New Zealand dollars, but even in Australian dollars, it's still relatively big. The biggest parts of that pie chart, and MSD wanted me to do it in a pie chart, is the DPB, which is the single parent pensions, and the invalids benefits. So invalids benefits, people tend to stay on that till they hit retirement. So that ends up being quite large, even though you get fewer numbers coming onto benefit each year. So that makes up almost half between it, those two. And then unemployment benefit, which does get all of the press. Everyone always talks about the unemployment rate and how many people are on unemployment benefits. is relatively smaller, and that is because it's a much shorter lived benefit type on average. People tend to stay on it for 6 months or less. Sickness benefits in there, and perhaps a bit of a surprise is the amount going to accommodation supplement, which is this is the lifetime costs for everyone who'd received the benefit in 2010-11, or at least the estimated lifetime costs, and $10 billion of it relates to the accommodation supplement. You can't read this one, it's too small, but that just gives the same information as the pie chart in a bit more detail. So you can download the presentation if you're interested. So what does this mean for future cash flows? Well, they're going up by about the rate of CPI, which is good because that's what the rate of inflation for benefits is. And if we hadn't got that, somebody would have asked difficult questions. You can see that dark blue relates to the cash flows related to just those people who had been in what we call the current liability. And then the lighter blue is the new people coming into the system, or those who hadn't been who had been on previously but not in the year leading up to the valuation. And you can see that it's about they pay about $7 to $8 billion a year at the moment in benefits. And here's the sensitivity to economic assumptions, which I spoke about earlier. It's about a 10% change, a 1% change in the interest rate or the inflation rate, which leads to a sort of $7 to $8 billion increase or decrease in the liability or the value of the lifetime costs. And you know, you get gasps of shock and horror when you show this slide to senior management, who sort of wonder how they can trust or believe or put any reliance on a system where a small change in something can lead to an $8 billion difference. But I think we're over the line now in terms of communicating that, you know, this is a really just a way of allowing for the time value of money and future inflation, and that provided we communicate well the any changes in those assumptions, that, you know, they can be considered external to MSD's influence, and it's really the rest of the changes from valuation to valuation that are important. All right, hopefully that's it for me for a while. Okay, just the last slide here on what's coming next. I guess the keywords, the buzzwords, are about monitoring and insights, management information. It's all about MSD making use of the detail in some way so that they can drive change. They can use it to, in their operations to understand where are the biggest costs, you know, what sort of trials, what sort of interventions should they be trying, and what impact do those things have. One suggestion I made was that, as we've talked about, them doing controlled trials for anything new to make sure they really understand whether things work. And I suggested they go back and try everything that they've currently got in place by removing things one at a time and seeing if any of them actually work also. But I'll wait for that to happen. I'll hand back to Ben for a bit, and then I'll be up again later, if there's time.
I'll just flip through a few slides about the implementation of the investment approach very briefly. As mentioned before, this is one of the biggest changes in the welfare system for 50 years in New Zealand. One of the key sort of policy changes is to collapse some of these benefit categories, get rid of the sickness benefit and create a job seeker support, tighten the gateway to the what was used to be called the invalid's benefit, and make changes to the sole parent benefit, remove that kind of domestic purposes connotation. Another key change is that ministers will be much less hands-on than they were in the past and give greater autonomy and accountability on MSD management. That's the theory anyway. It's quite a long program of reform. They started making changes in July last year. There were changes to sole parent benefits in October, and then in July this year they'll be implementing major changes to these benefit categories and some social obligations, which perhaps less key to welfare reform and more other government priorities. MSD is obviously thinking a lot about, it will make fundamental changes to its service delivery model and how it makes its decisions. And Eric here, who's they've now got some actuarial capability and is in the process of building the team to and thinking about those issues. Using that graph of Alan's before, it just sort of makes the point that at the moment, almost all, a very high proportion of MSD's expenditure on client initiatives are based on UB, which does make up a very small portion of the population. And as the economy improves, these people generally find, a high proportion of these people find jobs anyway without needing to intervention from MSD. There's more like the folks case management on the sole parents. Still not much on the invalid's benefit, but the, as I say, the gateway's tightening. Most people who leave an invalid's benefit either retire or they die. It's not in general portions. Looking at the age cohort, you can see that it does make obvious sense to invest at a younger, those cohorts who are going to be on the benefit system a long time potentially, particularly once they enter the system. So it gives a basis for MSD to spend a lot more up front. There's also, it gives a very clear sense on who to focus on and opens up scopes for different kinds of intervention, spending more up front, and I'll just leave it at that, so I'll just keep it pretty tight.
Okay. We did this presentation once before, and Ben was just filling in for Kari Wolanski from MSD. So, and then it's my turn to wrap up. I'll just do the detailed results here. I won't go through them all. Just a couple that are, I think are more interesting. This is one we recommended to MSD that anything new that they try, they should set up a controlled trial in advance and that way they can really determine whether things work or not and then can them if they don't and not to be upset about it. But it goes without saying that sometimes some things are going to be tried without that sort of approach. And here's an example of one policy change that was made in about September 2010. And the two curves that are shown there, the blue and the green, show a sort of a before and after probability of staying on the unemployment benefit, and you can see that the probability of staying on that benefit is lower after the change to policy, and it's sort of led, you know, on this basis it's resulted in at least a 15% improvement in the number on unemployment benefits. So this was a good way of showing some of the value that you can achieve from looking at the models, even though it was done retrospectively. This just is a comparison of the four main models for this whole valuation are the probability of staying on those four main benefit types. And it just shows you the really big differences that there are in these four benefits. So, as I said, the invalid's benefit, people tend to stay on that, as Ben said, until they retire or die, and that's the green line at the top. Whereas on unemployment benefits, the probability of staying on that's a lot lower, and so people are cycling off it more quickly. Sickness is similar to unemployment benefits, although it doesn't have the big dip for the GFC. So that big its dip down here was the leading up to the GFC when the economy was booming, and then. And things went pear-shaped, and the probability of staying on unemployment benefit rose. The yellow line is sort of in between them, which is the single parent pensions. Now, I've got an expanded view of each of these, the next four slides, and it's just interesting because, that's the unemployment benefit. You can see the seasonality in there. But the one to look at, I guess, is the invalid's benefit, which looks like it was a flat line on that really small scale. When you expand the scale, so here the scale's from only 0.974 to 0.985, so the probability of staying on benefit is between 1.5% and 2.5% per quarter. You can see there's been some significant changes. So they, they were coming down. The probability of staying on was reducing. But then over the last 6 or 7 years, it started increasing again. And this is something that they probably wouldn't get just from looking at the aggregate sort of information that they'd had previously. We've got some segmented results. I won't go through them. It's just looking at the age breakdown and the payment years into the future. The last thing I'll show you is these are one-person projections. So you can just take somebody with certain characteristics and run them through the modelling. And it's interesting to see where they transition. So this is somebody who starts on unemployment benefits. I've been on it for a year. They're age 35. And you can see that they've relatively quickly, they're in the grey area, which most people, about 80% end up in the grey, which is not on benefits. But the rest end up sort of equally spread, more or less, between the four different benefit types. So it shows you the amount that people move around unemployment benefits. Whereas, for example, somebody who starts on invalid's benefits, which is the middle one, the green one, they pretty much stay there. And you, of course, you see the sort of humps where people are hit sort of the childbearing years, and so you get more people on the single parent pensions and then moving off and finding somewhere else to go. So that's it. We've left hopefully enough time for some questions.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. That's fascinating, some big numbers. And if people have questions, could you please come to the microphone and say who you are? Everything's being recorded, so I'm sure there are some questions on that. And if there aren't, I'll ask one. So, Alan, I think you had these words on one slide, but you didn't go into any detail in it. I would have thought that the psychosocial impacts are huge in this, as they are in compensation. So to what extent can you, do you think that you can ever model those? And because I would have thought from an intervention perspective, understanding how interventions impact those psychosocial behaviours would be vital to be able to maybe predict, the outcomes.
At the moment the valuation sort of, I guess, at a higher level than that. The aim is that the part of the whole framework, the structure, is to have these three layers of detail. And at the most detailed level is when they should be when MSD will do controlled trials. So that'll be the innovation approach of saying what do we need to do to get people off benefits, and so that's about coming up with ideas, reading the latest literature, doing academic reviews, sitting around a table brainstorming, and then getting ideas that they can put in place, and then it'll be a case of doing the detailed modelling and setting up a trial that looks at the effectiveness of the approach. And so that's where, provided the trial's set up well, that they'll be able to see whether those things are working.
Oh, great. Okay. Question from the floor.
Thanks, Sal. Peter Brown from Vero in New Zealand, so obviously have some interest in this. I was vaguely aware of it, but I hadn't seen much about it. I don't know whether I'm going to make your life a little bit more difficult, but it's certainly an interesting concept, and it doesn't. I don't think the answer of 78 billion means anything. It's more a matter of what you. It seems to me that, and also seems that the welfare system doesn't live in isolation. That's obviously what we pay people who have various benefits, but the tax system in New Zealand is obviously designed to try and keep people off welfare as well too, particularly lower paid people and so on. Have we thought about how we can try and use this sort of approach to try and work out, I guess, the efficient frontier for how the two sort of systems are work together? Probably we're a few iterations on, I imagine, with that, but I'd just be interested in any thoughts about that.
So you want someone? Walk before you can run. It did come up initially to consider whether the whole system of government should be included in scope. So things that were talked about were the justice system, the health system, education. Education system. So, but it's impossible to model all of those, I think, until you at least get one of them right. So we, you know, that was ruled out. And what you're sort of suggesting is part of that. And I don't know, but in the end, I don't think it's necessary because, in a way, the outcome here, it was always stressed that any changes to reduct, it wasn't about reducing the liability. You know, to do that, you just cut benefits in half. But while that might reduce a lifetime cost to MSD, it probably results in more people in hospitals or in jails or in other parts of society costing money. So you probably don't achieve anything. Who knows? But if you focus only on getting people off benefits by getting them into employment, you know, if that's the criteria, then it's a win-win. So you're reducing benefits. People are in employment, which has been shown to have mental and physical benefits for them, and then the tax system is doing better as well. So, you know, then people say, yeah, but how are you going to create the jobs for those people? But, you know, it's about making people available for work when, you know, as the economy's improved, and you don't want people who are on long-term benefits who end up sitting on that as a sort of an expectation or as a way of life, and so to get them off earlier when there is a capability to do so is the benefit there. I've probably rambled and not answered your question at all.
But I'll just reiterate the point I made earlier that there's so much greater level of understanding that can be that government departments need to go through to understand the underlying costs and trends within the system and the effectiveness of their interventions. The weakest part of our public sector model is that performance information on how effective our interventions are and feeding that information back. So it's, while our system's very good at specifying what we want the department to do, it's not very good at telling us how effective the department is at doing it. So we see this, the potential with this approach is just to get a greater understanding, recognising, of course, that there's loads of other factors that determine unemployment, and unemployment's more complex than accident compensation, where somebody's we can recover from an injury and then be exited from the scheme. So it's just that we just see it as a potential to get a lot further than where we are currently. The current base is pretty low. You could say that.
I just wanted to agree with you too that when you said the $78 billion is a bit irrelevant, I mean it is definitely about the change from year to year. So that's what we've been highlighting, and it's provided you do it on a consistent basis and you can isolate various impacts, then that's where the information will come at the high level. But it is also useful. The $78 billion is, you know, lots of people that are getting whose lifetime costs might be as low as $10,000 or $300,000, and I think that's important information to be able to distinguish between those people and therefore make informed decisions about how much money to invest to get people off benefits.
Okay, well, I think we've got time for two questions. So this one and Nathan.
Chris Logan. I guess the model looks at the past as a guide to the future. And do you feel that type of model might restrict innovation because to some extent some of these new ideas can't be measured? Or do you think it will enhance innovation?
Yeah. The way we want to deal with that is that the idea is that if MSD runs a trial and is able to and does it in a sort of a statistically sound way and proves that something is leads to a viable, sustainable reduction in the payment of benefits, then you could take that information and roll it up based on the whole valuation and say what the total saving would be. So if there's that information, it empowers MSD to go and do that sort of thing, and then they can say, well, look, we've just done this innovation, and based on the analysis, it looks like it'll save us $1 billion, and then they can go back with their hands out to Treasury. So I think having the framework in place gives them that opportunity. You know, but inevitably there'll be reticence on Treasury's part to be handing out lots of money, and so some things will be after the event. But they can still look at putting in the controlled trials in the first place. So, I mean, they need to, you know, it's a sort of a management change exercise for them, a cultural change to be doing some of these things. But, you know, hopefully they're on a path to do that.
Thanks. Nathan?
I got the impression it was the transition between benefit types was pretty important, and that led to something quite complex as well. We talked about 5 million odd permutations.
50 million.
50 million. So I was wondering, that seemed to have a few implications for me. I didn't see any sensitivity to changes in transition levels. What was the quality of the data like over time, such that you could get some handle on whether the transition was stable over time or not? And if there is a rate of change over time, if there are trends in the transitions, presume that could lead to some quite sort of unstable results. How did you deal with that?
We did a lot of backtesting. So we took cohorts of the clients at various points in time in history, so like 10 years ago, and then rolled them forward with the models that had been fitted and sort of measured how well the results would have been using on the base of those models. And, we were pretty happy with the results, with the way they worked. And it doesn't seem to have led to any, major instabilities. We had to deal with a GFC in there, and those things seem to be dealt with okay. Hugh, who's the architect of most of this work, sitting up the back there, so he deserves a big round of applause. And if he's got any further thoughts on that, he's welcome to add them.
Okay, I'm just going to ask one more question, because I would really like to know the answer to this. Welfare dependency in communities is clearly a huge issue, and I noticed some of your factors that you discovered had an impact on your transition probabilities. Were you able to link and look at families and include in there whether other family members were also receiving welfare payments?
There is some work that's been done at MSD along those lines. We haven't done it. There's been discussion of using other indicators, such as ethnicity, as an indicator of the likelihood of staying on benefit. And we've done some further work, which hasn't been released yet, so I can't really talk about it, but ethnicity is part of that. And so you do get strong relationships with other factors.
Okay. Because I've been in the UK recently and they've got a lot of social welfare problems, they had an intervention where they targeted and tried to identify the sort of 5,000 families who had the strongest dependency, and in essence had an individual person who became the mother for these families and went in and taught them how to sort out their lives. So that's why I was sort of interested in to what extent you can look at families.
It's safe to say that MSD have probably considered them.
Yeah.
Eric's the first and new actuary at MSD, so he's not allowed to say anything either.
Okay, so I think we'll just finish off by thanking Alan and Ben. And Alan, I expect you'll be giving your bottle of wine to Hugh, seeing as he did all the work and you did all the talking. So thank you very much. It's tea time now.